Yes, yes, y'all. Yes, and you don't stop. Keep it on. Stock in the place. See, I got nothing to prove. Pay attention. My intention is to boss the move. I drink cards and cans and bottles and sectors. Between the turntables, keep the vodka and the rest.
Mike G, I got the
deuces
wide. Yeah, I lift the girlies numbers. I'll let I die. The Smurf, the Popeye, and the Jerry Lewis. I like the wicker, but I don't like women.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Damo back on the show, and it is Monday, August 14th. It's been a while since we've talked. I think it's been a month? Quite, I don't remember. It's been a while though since we've talked. We talked last a little after Summer League and did a little bit of a recap. So naturally, we're in kind of the dead point of the offseason now where not a whole lot is going on, but still going to try and bring you guys content. Didn't want to be gone for too terribly long. Shout out to the other Wizards content creators that have been consistently putting out podcasts, definitely keeping everyone entertained during this dead period. But we'll just kind of get right into it here. So again, not going to be too heavy on Wizards talk today. Like, we're not going to get into the roster a whole bunch, not going to get into depth chart predictions, like coaching strategies, anything like that. We will get into the Wizards 2K ratings that came out. Bullets Forever posted an article on it, so if you guys want to go check it out, feel free to do so. Bill Simmons on his podcast did something a little bit recently that will kind of inspire what I think will be the biggest portion of our show today, and that is if there were an expansion draft, who would we like the Wizards to protect? And in the situation of an expansion draft, you are allowed to protect 8 players. So we will both go over our 8 and who we would like to see the Wizards protect in that scenario. And it is actually somewhat relevant because I think that the league will be expanding here probably within the next couple or a few years. At least 2 other teams I think will probably get brought on board. So not that irrelevant of a conversation. Bilal Coulibaly was on a podcast with Rafael Barlow from Locked On NBA Big Board, so got to hear him talk a little bit more about his journey and his experience so far. We'll get into that. And then to finish things off, we will discuss Dame and Harden and where things kind of stand with those two. But first things first, Wizards 2K player ratings came out. It looked like the highest player that the Wizards have, at least starting out the year, will be Kyle Kuzma at 83 overall, which is what I believe he ended in 2K23, I believe was his final rating. Jordan Poole is at 82, which is interesting because in 2K23, I believe he's currently in 84. So dropping a couple points there, which I guess we can get into. I'm not really sure why, but other than that, everything kind of the same. I think actually every player's rating is the same that'll be carrying over from 2K23. So like, for example, I think Cooks was a 71, Gil was a 72, Denny's a 76, Corey is a 78. So I know the Corey and Denny discussion we'll have here in a sec. Coulibaly will be a 73. Gafford, I think, is a 78 as well. So most of that is pretty typical, but I think that what we'll spend most of our time touching on here is why Jordan Poole's at 82 and then why Corey Kispert is two overalls ahead of Denny Avdia. But just your initial thoughts on these ratings firsthand.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty fair. I mean, yeah, Kuzma begins this year kind of where he ended last year, 83 overall. That I guess that makes him a top 100 player. And I think that's fair. I think that's about, you know, where I would have him. And then Jordan Poole, I think the only thing that really would make sense as far as his rating dropping is probably the position change. Because I think on 2K23 he's a point guard, and then if you switch him to shooting guard, his rating does decrease. I don't know why, because the positions now are pretty much interchangeable with how they're used, but I guess how, you know, 2K algorithm works. With Jordan Poole's game, it dropped him a little bit.
I still think that either way, again, it is really weird sometimes how it can change. Now, a lot of that has to do with playmaking or shot creation ability. I've realized can be like a big difference between point guard and shooting guard. So maybe the playmaking had, you know, something to factor in with that. But either way, I think that it's pretty safe to say that Jordan Poole's overall will rise pretty quickly this year. At least I would think. I mean, at the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me if he's like in that 85, 86 territory. So at least that may hopefully a little bit higher, you know, selfishly as a Wizards fan, you know, maybe a little bit unrealistic. But I would love for him to get up in the 87, 88 range. That would mean that we have a real player on our hands. Kuzma at 83. I definitely feel like he could be like an 84. I'm not going to say 85, but 84 was kind of what I was hoping for. But 83, again, it's what he ended with on 2K23. So not the worst thing ever. But what did you make of Kispert getting 78 and Denny at 76?
Man, it looks right to me. I don't think it's a secret. I mean, I think Kispert is better than Denny. Like, I just think, you know, they're different. And I guess, you know, people will go back and forth on their preference of, I guess, how they the idea of Denny, of him being a two-way player, which I don't think he is. It's kind of like what you, to me, I just view it as like, which one is more of a seamless fit on a roster? Like, I feel like between the two of them, I think Kispert can play on any roster. You just plug him in, he's going to complement shot creators, star players just fine. Whereas with Denny, I don't see a situation where he starts on any team because he just, you know, you're going to put a center on him and he can't go left. So, you know, he's pretty much going to be a bench player no matter who he plays for. So that's just how I see it. And I feel like that's how the coaching staff views it, because if you look at any opportunity where that arose, where we had to put in, you know, we had to plug in an extra wing for injury, it was always they went to Kispert first. Like, so,
yeah.
And if you look at the advanced numbers say Kispert is better too. So, you know, I mean, it's just, again, but I can see why, you know, if you're looking at it from a skill breakdown, you know, you say, okay, well, Denny's bigger. He's a better defender, better passer, better rebounder. So he does more things. But those more things, to me, in its totality, don't really matter if you're not doing them at a level that change a game.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely agree. I mean, I would have Kispert at a higher overall, too. So not any shade. But I think that right now, specifically, because everyone's like, oh, it could be anyone's game with the small forward position right now, and you have Denny and Corey, and I think Koulibaly is going to be in that mix too. But Koulibaly, you know, number 7 overall pick, really, really raw prospect, as we saw in summer league, and he definitely has a lot of tools, right? But you got to be able to put it together. And so I think a 73 is probably appropriate for him to start off with this year, but it wouldn't surprise me if he ends the year on like a 76, 77 range, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard to really get put a rating on him because, I mean, shoot, 6 months ago, he was an unknown. Like, he wasn't even in this draft class 6 months ago. So to think he's going to all of a sudden have, you know, a 78 rookie rating, like, I mean, nah. Yeah, it's just not enough out there on him. So he'll have an opportunity to earn it, because I envision him playing a lot this season.
Moving on from the 2K ratings, and speaking of Koulibaly, he was recently on a podcast with Rafael Barlow from Locked On NBA Big Board. And just kind of talked about his journey from where he started at to where he is now, his experience with Summer League and what it was like for him on draft night, and then kind of going forward a little bit. I'll start first on this one, and I think his mentality, I think, is very, very solid for where he's at, being that he just turned 19. He seems very confident in his own abilities, but he realizes that he has a lot to learn and still has a lot of room to grow. The one thing that I like is that he keeps harping on the defensive end of the floor, which I know is going to be music to most of the Wizards fan base's ears, because for a while now we've been asking for guys with two-way ability. And at least we've been so bad at the defensive end of the floor for a long time. It's if we can at least get someone who can play defense and want to play defense on a consistent basis. And I think that's something that we've been kind of missing in the Beal era. I mean, even really going back to the later John Wall years, just the team couldn't play defense. So the idea that we're adding a 6'8", 6'9 guy who's probably going to continue to grow, just turned 19 and already has that mentality, I think it's a very good sign and good things to hear from him so far. What did you make of listening to this podcast and just hearing what Coulibaly had to say about the whole process?
Yeah, man, it was just cool to hear. Like, he's so humble. Like, you could tell he just doesn't even know. He's just so green. Like, he just doesn't know. He's confident, but he doesn't really know where his game is going or could go yet. But what I like about it is that he takes pride on that defensive end. Like, when he talks about defense, you could tell that's somebody that, like, really, like, he doesn't like being scored on. And I mean, he has the tools up for it. Because, I mean, let's be honest, like, I don't care what you teach Corey Kispert, there's going to be a ceiling on how effective he can be defensively because of his physical limitations. Same thing with Bradley Beal. Same thing with a guy like a Trae Young. Some of these guys, like, it's not an effort thing. It's just like they're just limited athletes in a league that kind of chooses for physicality and height and athleticism. So on that end, like, he has it. Like, it don't take long. You can see. Like, he's a NBA, upper echelon NBA athlete, and it shows up on the defensive end, like, immediately. So, and he takes pride in it. So all you got to kind of do is just kind of coach him up within the scheme. And I think he has a chance to be all NBA level on that end.
Yeah, definitely. And, again, either way, I think that we're going to come away from this draft class with at least two. I think Tristan will be a good rotational piece. Now, eventually, I think we'd like to see him with his type of ability and potential as well. We'd like to see him turn into a starter eventually, which would be a really good get, considering he was a second-round pick. Coulibaly, I think, at minimum, will be maybe like an OG Anunoby player long-term, like a starter-level player for sure, and maybe like borderline all-star some years. I think that's probably fair to say as of now. Now, he could explode, and, you know, he could end up being Giannis and that Giannis Luka tier player, but I think that's kind of unfair to place that expectation on him from the jump. But I think it's pretty fair to say that this is easily the most excited I think the fan base has been for a prospect in a while.
Yeah, like OG is kind of where, like, the middle area or the middle tier player I have for him. Like, if you want to go upper echelon tier, like, totally maxed out, he could be like a baby Giannis or a Scottie Pippen, right? OG Anunoby, I think, is obviously more realistic, you know. And then on the low end, you know, say if at worst he's just, you know, a bench spot defender, you know, athletic defender. Yeah. I can't even think of somebody like that has those types of tools though that didn't, you know, that had that type of those tools that didn't pan out. Like, I'm trying to think of a guy that could be a low end comparison for him.
It's hard.
It's really hard. Like, I had to come back on that one, but yeah, like, I think OG is a good comp for him, man. You know, I think if he never learned how to, you know, if he never became a 20-point scorer, never became an all-star, like, I think OG is a realistic get for him.
And that's a good player. And I still think that even with the number 7 overall pick, and yeah, we could look back in hindsight and say, like, oh, whoever was picked 9, 10th, or 11th turned out to be a better player or whatever, you know. we could have that conversation down the line. And I think it's a little bit unfair right now to crown him and be like, oh, he's going to be the next superstar. He's going to run the league. Like, again, I feel like that's just a little bit unfair. So I think that OG Anunoby tier type player is very fair. And again, I think that that's still good value with the number 7 overall pick. If that's the type of player that he turns into, I don't think that that's bad at all.
It would be the best player you've drafted since Beal.
Exactly. Jack.
So, yeah, that's a hell of a player.
On the Bill Simmons podcast recently, I had some time to kill on my drive down here to Texas. So I was listening to a lot of the Bill Simmons podcast and catching up on it. I do enjoy the show, and he hates the Wizards for some reason, but I do enjoy listening to him talk about basketball with his guests and whatnot. If you guys don't listen to it, I would go check it out. It's definitely insightful and gives you another perspective on just how people outside the league or outside like your fan base kind of view your team whenever conversations come up. And then just other views on other NBA teams that they don't necessarily follow. Like we don't follow the Celtics, Heat, and Kings, and neither does Bill Simmons. So it's easy. So it's fun to like hear them talk about other teams and stuff like that as well. And he's sourced up and everything like that, so he knows a lot of things about the game as well. But anyway, on what I believe was their latest podcast, or at minimum one of their most recent podcasts, they were doing a fun little exercise, and it was, if there were an expansion draft, who were the 8 players that you would protect? Now, they went through all the teams. We're just going to do the Wizards today, but I guess we can start off here. Well, we can go. Do you want to do this in order, like who we would pose, like who we would protect the most, and go, or you just want to go in like random order?
Yeah, we can go random order.
Okay. Well, just looking down the roster here, I think the number one player that I would protect would be Jordan Poole. I think him and Kuzma and Koulibaly would be the 3. And I mean, we're going to look at the roster, and it's going to be really easy to make these kind of decisions. But those are the 3, like, non-starter. Those are the 3 that I'm protecting no matter what. Kuzma, Poole, and Koulibaly. You can't have them.
Yeah, so I feel like this is kind of a loaded question, because it's like, because he's the best player now, does that necessarily mean he's got to be untouchable? Yeah, so I would say Bilal is definitely going nowhere. So I would definitely agree with that. I would say, given contract,
that's why I picked Kuzma.
I would say Kuzma.
Right.
Ooh, I'm not sure, because if he has another year like he had just this past year, that contract could look bad again. And so for me, it's a lot riding on this year for him. Like he needs to have a good season. Because if that becomes a contract that you have to salary dump, within, you know, then it's like, yeah, well, you can have him. I would say I would put my top 3 as Kuzma, Bilal, and probably Gafford, again, because of the contract. Like, that contract at $12 million, if you're looking at him as a starter, is really good. And of course he still has upside. So I would go with those 3.
Okay, so we have 3 out of, I think we'll probably end up having the same 8 overall, but we'll see here. So let me see. So I have, well, Poole, Kuzma, and you have, who do you have so far? You have Bilal, Kuzma, and Gafford. Okay. Going off the next couple here, Gafford would definitely be one I'll protect. So I'll put Gafford and add him to my list. And then after that, I would go Kispert.
Yeah, so then my next two would be just again based on just contract, Kispert and oh man, I can't.
I know you're not gonna pick Donnie Davis over Jordan Poole. I know you're not gonna do
it. I can't believe I'm saying this. Yeah, I am. I'm going Donnie Davis. You want Donnie goddamn Davis, man. Yeah, just off again, it's contract. You got him under control for another 3 years, and he's a top 10 pick. Like,
so what this tells me is deep down inside, you feel like Jordan Poole is not going to have that good of a year, is what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the risk factor of it, because of his contract, he needs to have a good year to justify the money he's making. Whereas with some of these other guys, if they have a so-so year or, you know, a bad year, it's like, it's not going to kill you because you have them under cost control deals. Or they're on the last year of the deal, so it doesn't really hurt you in a case like a Denny. That's why I say, that's why I have to put Johnny Davis here. Like, he's a top 10 pick going into year two on a rookie contract. Like, he needs to be, you need him to pop so that you have a good player on a cheap contract. But then if he doesn't pop, he's on a cheap contract. Like, you could just discard him. That calculus is a little harder when you're talking Jordan Poole.
Next two on the list for me, I'm going to go Tyus because I think it's a tradable contract and I think he'll be valuable at the deadline, even if the Wizards decide they don't want to keep him. And then I'm going to go Vucevic.
Yeah, so I will go Vuc. See, I can't put Tyus because he's on the last year of his deal.
The only reason I'm doing that is, and I thought about this because there was a player who you picked that I did not pick, and I was going to put him on there, but I said, at the end of the day, who do I think is going to have the most value around the trade deadline? And so that's why I kept Tyus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, for me, it would be Vuc and then this is tough.
You got two more spots.
So after picking Vuc, I got two more.
Yep, right now you're at six. You have Koulibaly, Kuzma, Gafford, Kispert, Johnny, and Tristan.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go Vuc. Pat Baldwin.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm intrigued, man. I'm intrigued. And again, he's cheap. If he turns out to be just an average player, that is a win because of the type of money he's on. Yeah. I'm gonna go Vuc, Pat Baldwin. And I got room for one more, right?
Yep.
Shit, who the hell is left? It's hard to even get eight with this damn roster. I guess I would go Ty just to retain the trade value, I guess. I guess I would go Tyus.
Okay.
But because he's on the last year of his deal, it's like, you know, how much value do you really think you're going to get for a guy that most people view as a backup point guard? Like, I don't really see him much of a – he's better than Monte, but not much better to change his value to me.
Here's how I view it, though. He's
on the last year of his deal.
Right. Here's how I view it, though. Like, injuries happen and stuff, and we were hearing that Kuzma could have gotten, like, 2 first-round picks a deadline. Are you telling that if a team got –
this shit is over, man.
Riddled with injuries, or if a team was looking to seriously add some depth as they make a championship push, that no one would give a first for Tyus? No. Which is more value than what a lot of our guys would get.
I don't think so, man. I think that market, the market that existed where Kyle Kuzma would have got 2 ones, and where we were talking about KP possibly netting us a one or 2 ones, and Beal getting 2 ones, that market is over. Teams holding on to these picks because of the way the new CBA is, there's no middle market now. So you have to have first round picks to fill out your roster.
My last protected player that I'm going to pick to get me at 8 is Denny. So
yeah, I was going back and forth between him and Tyus. They both on the last year of the deal. You know, but I went with Tyus because I feel like he has more value right now.
So the ones that we have in common are Koulibaly. Let me highlight these here. We have Kuzma in common.
Mm-hmm.
We have Gafford in common. We have Kispert and Tyus in common. And we have Tristan in common.
The difference is Denny, Johnny Davis.
Yeah, so the difference is I picked Jordan Poole and Denny, and you picked Johnny Davis and Patrick Baldwin.
Right, right.
So the reason I'm picking Denny is, even if he has, like, a mid-season, like, say he has the type of season he had last year, but, you know, he's still improving, and I still think he'll be better this year. I mean, to be honest, in a lot of ways, it'd kind of be hard to be worse. So I'm going to go ahead and say that he improves. Now, I think that he has the baseline skills and traits to warrant a team being interested later on in the year. And even though he's on the last year of his contract, the team basically gets to retain his rights for another year if it gets to that point, because he'll be in restricted free agency. So you'll have the ability to match any offer. And right now we have no reason to believe that it's going to be an outrageous offer. I mean, right now it's probably like, what, 11, 12 mil maybe. And is that awful? No. If you can't come to an agreement, then he accepts the qualifying offer and you have him on the books for another year.
I just look at it like, it's like similar to how the situation we have with Rui, like, except it's a player who's done less than what Rui had done up to this point.
I agree with you. I would say that I think Denny's on-ball defense is a serious asset for a team that has the other right pieces around there. Like, I think that for a team that doesn't have a lot of defense, that if you plug Denny in and he can give you like 20 to 24, 25 minutes off the bench as a lockdown perimeter defender, I think that's a very valuable asset for a lot of teams.
But what team is that, though, that's in the playoffs? Because typically, if you're in the playoffs, you're defending. Oh. Like, usually teams that are in the playoffs, they're looking for guys that can shoot.
I mean, I know the Hawks could use him.
Yeah, but they're not in the playoffs.
I mean, they should be. They should be.
I don't know, man. I think they got worse this year. I think they had one of the worst offseasons this summer. But
Dallas? Dallas could use him right now. They're starting Tim Hardaway Jr. He's washed. They could use someone else.
Yeah, they do. That's another non-playoff team, though.
you don't think Dallas is going to make the playoffs this year?
Why should I bank pencil them in? For what?
I don't know. You can say that about any team outside of Denver, Milwaukee, and Boston.
When should I pencil Dallas in to make the playoffs when they just missed the playoffs in a West that I think just got stronger?
Grizzlies could use them. They don't have a three right now. I think their starting three is going to be Conchar.
I wouldn't say that. I got to see what Zaire Williams do, man. I think he got something to say about that.
All right, we shall see. Milwaukee, if they wanted to put Middleton back at the two, I don't know.
Adding another nine, I don't know. Is Denny better than Marjan right now?
Yeah.
Okay. No, man. Marjan just dropped 80 something.
I try not to shit on Denny, okay? Like, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt in a lot of these situations because I definitely understand, like, where fans see, like, the excitement and the potential with him. So I try to meet in the middle of, yeah, he could be a lot better and a lot more valuable than what he is, but then the reality of he just hasn't been. So I'm trying to, like,
I'm just looking at it like this. He's not better than Corey Kispert. And Corey Kispert is a one-dimensional specialist shooter. That's really it for me. Like,
yeah.
Corey Kispert, man. No shade to Corey Kispert, but come on.
I'd be interested. Maybe I'll post a poll after we record. Like, which two would you protect in an expansion draft? I'll post Poole and Denny, and we'll see. And I'll post Davis and Baldwin as the other option, and we'll see who gets more votes there.
I would hope that. Hold up. You said. Poole and Denny versus, Poole and Denny versus Baldwin Davis. I would hope Poole and Denny win that poll. But I'm thinking of it more of a like contract value, you know, risk analysis standpoint. Like, if we keep those guys and they bomb, we're fucked. If we keep the other two guys and they bomb, well, we're all right. Like, it's no big deal.
But I feel like, again, like these two, and maybe I guess you could argue that Johnny could end up being better than Denny in some respect, but the upside with those two, with Poole and Denny, is if they play well, I mean, you're really gonna like see the reward from that because, again,
in another universe, they could be the new Draymond and Steph,
right?
If you squint real hard, you can see it.
I mean, even though I think Jordan is going to be fine with his value because I think he's going to have a really good year. So that's why I would protect him. And again, I think that Denny, at least his defense, I think gives teams a little bit more to hang on to than Baldwin, he just hasn't gotten enough consistent minutes for me to warrant, like, I want to protect him in a draft like that. So that would be my, because I did think about Baldwin too, to be honest. He was high on the list there, higher than the guys after I picked my list, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And I know that the Denny fans would have let me hear it. And just thinking about it more, I'm like, I know that Denny can play at a high level. And that doesn't mean all-star, that doesn't mean superstar, but he can play at a high level for his role and what he is potentially asked to do. As long as his head's in the game. And if he can get his three-point shot up, I'll take 34-35%. If he can give me that, then that to me is a rotational piece.
I'm with you, man. I totally agree. But that rotational piece going to want to get paid if he does well this year. And how much are you willing to pay?
Yeah, I hear you.
When you just drafted his position top seven.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the writing is on the wall there. Like, if Denny and Corey think they're going to get paid and they're going to continue to be the starting three, I would bet against that. Unless they decide to put JP at the one and then they just slide Bilal at the two or whatever. But eventually, the writing is on the wall when they made the pick, when they traded up to get the guy. He plays your position eventually for politics. Warrant it or not, he's going to play over you. He's going to get more minutes than you. That's just how it works.
Pretty much. Pretty much. You'd be real naive not to view it in that context.
See, a fun little exercise there. It's interesting, though, the difference. I thought we were going to have the same eight. I'm surprised that you went the angle that you did. And you've been one that's really excited about JP, so I figured you would have put him
JP be going ball. I can't wait to go to that Golden State matchup at home. I think he's going to ball out, man. But, I'm looking at it from how much money he making. Like, if it go the wrong way, like, we might be stuck with that for a little bit. And then you'd be sitting there saying, damn, an expansion draft. Yeah, they could have took that off our hands. Because for me, like, if I'm being 100% transparent, man, like, all I really care about from this point forward is Bilal, bro.
Yeah.
I'm just being real with you, man. Like, Jordan Poole, I think he's going to ball. Obviously, I'm a fan of Kuzma. But I think by the time this team is ready to, like, really, like, compete for championships, it's going to be because of Bilal.
Yeah, I believe so, too.
Bilal and whoever the hell else is next to him or... that's where I'm at with it. Like, I'm looking at Bilal.
Yeah, and I certainly hope that that's the case. And obviously, we'd love for them to go out there and compete for a title this year. But reality is, this is probably not going to happen. And it's probably not going to happen for, they probably won't start being a good playoff team again, you know, if things go right, you know, for another 2 to 3 years, probably. So, yeah. It's going to take time, but again, you set the clock.
The 2024 draft and the 2025 draft, like that's what I'm looking at.
Last little exercises here around the league. Damian Lillard still not traded. It seems like the Blazers are still really not wanting to bite on that, and I think that Miami is trying not to offer a whole lot because they know that that's the only team that Dame wants to go to, and the league did put out. What was that? A memo to teams or players or whatever, reminding them that they can't come out and say that they only want to play for one team or something along those lines. Basically, stop with the tampering. Even though that we all know that that's what's going to be thought regardless, I guess they just don't want guys publicly saying it as much. And I get it. It's not good optics on the league. I mean, and I've said several times, my view on the matter is if you should be lucky enough that a team wants to trade for you and get your services and give up future first-round picks and assets that they already have in their organization to get you, you put your uniform on and you go play for them. And what happens after that? Well, if you're so good, well, then make them better. But look, I get it. He's 32, 33 years old, I think. Would love to be in a nicer situation. Being in Miami for the last, you know, how long is his extension? I think he had like a 2 or 3 year extension. He's probably got like 4 or 5 years left. So I definitely understand like wanting to be in a nice situation like that to close out your career. And I still think that it's going to happen to Miami at some point. But I just wonder with the timing of everything, if maybe Miami decides to go a different direction or maybe Portland just decides, you know what, screw it. It doesn't matter. And we're just going to deal him to Brooklyn or something.
Man, I mean, I've always thought the Nets was made more sense for the Blazers for what I thought they were trying to do, which is get as many assets and rebuild.
Right.
But it sounds like they want to still, like, compete and do, like, kind of this middle build thing. So then I guess maybe a Tyler Hero who's a more proven commodity is better than a bunch of, you know, unknown draft picks. But yeah, I think it could get interesting. I just think, you know, Harden kind of opting in kind of messed a lot of stuff up because that him going opting out was going to cause a domino effect everywhere else because then he needed another star for Embiid. You know, and that was then going to trigger a lot of other moves, you know, maybe Beal is in Philly instead of here. And then now, okay, well, shit, that might trigger, okay, well, what does Dame want to go and team up now in the East? So it's just like Harden kind of doing that kind of, to me, kind of put a little wrench in the star market, star guard market. But I think ultimately it's going to play out like how it always does. These players always end up where they want to go.
Yeah. I still think he definitely ends up in Miami. The one thing I'm kind of like, okay, dude, is Dame already had came out and said originally that he would like to play with McCall in Brooklyn. And now he's like, no, I only want to play for Miami. And it's like, dude, which is it? Like you said a while, because I bet you if he said that he'd be comfortable in Brooklyn and he'd want to go there, the deal would already be done. Because again, when it comes to tradable assets, it's not even close.
Not even close. Yeah, I agree. For future assets, it's definitely Brooklyn all the way. But yeah, he obviously does not want to play there because, like you say, it'll be done by now.
And it's really kind of, I don't know why he would be so against it. I mean, they were a playoff team this past year. And after the trade deadline, everyone was like, oh, they're going to suck. No, they played pretty well. And again, you look at the East, is Milwaukee going to be able to stay healthy? How much better is Miami than Brooklyn with the addition of Dame and then potentially what other moves that could potentially trigger for the Nets? You know, I mean, it's just something to think about. You know, I mean, obviously the favorites would still be Miami, Milwaukee, and Boston, I think. But after that, it's like, you know, put your hat in the ring, you know, give yourself a chance. But I don't know. But I mean, I definitely get it with Miami because, again, you pair up with Jimmy, who's one of the best two-way players in the game, and Bam, who is, you know, one of the, I don't want to say one of the best centers, but he's a really good center. He's an all-star level player, I would say. So, I mean, you pair up with those two, and it's, you know, you're probably the favorite in the East after you just came off a year of going to the finals with a lot of scrubs on the bench. So, again, I get it, but I just think that there'd be a really good opportunity for him there in Brooklyn as well. But I digress. But anyway, I still think he'll end up in Miami. But Harden, on the other hand, I don't know what is going on with this dude. The biggest name with him, or the biggest team with him, has been the Clippers. But I'm just, I don't know, like, why the Clippers would want to keep getting older and more useless. But that seems to be the trend that they've kind of been going in. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the move that they made. But other than that, it's like, it's really hard to think of any teams. To be honest, I wouldn't even have picked the Clippers as one of the teams unless it was already brought up in reports. Because from a basketball standpoint, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I really don't understand. Like the only, and I'm reading this Kyrie tweet where he basically goes at Adrian. And says, you know, is he holding, you know, is he disgruntled or is he holding Daryl Morey accountable for what he told him? But I mean, GMs, man, they lie all the time. GMs, owners, that's the nature of the business, right? Like
they have to protect their team first and foremost. And I get that it can be a slimy business sometimes, and I get it. And I'm not saying that these guys are right all the time. I'm not trying to be that guy that protects all the names at the top, but this is how sports works. And sometimes if you want your organization to run properly, at least to have good morale around the team and in the building, there's a lot of things sometimes that you just don't tell your guys because you don't want to mess up that camaraderie or that chemistry. And that's just the way it is. If you disagree with that, you disagree, but that's just not how pro sports works. And honestly, that's not how it works in the regular workplace either. I mean, as a supervisor, I'm sure a lot of you are supervisors at your work and you have people to look after. Every time they mess up or you don't like him, you're like, oh, I wish this guy would work somewhere else. You don't go and tell them that. You know, you let them play it out and then you let them work themselves into getting terminated or whatever the case may be, you know. But a lot of the time you just can't come out and say those kind of things.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I mean, shoot, Winger told Blake Griffin he was good and then traded his ass like the next day. So it's just like, you know, it's what they do, man. They have to. It's the business of the game. You know, I'm just wondering how egregious was the lie. Like, did he tell Harden, like, hey, opt in, we're gonna get you your deal, we're gonna get you 200 mil. And then as soon as he opted in, he was like, he left him on read. So it's like, I don't know. Cause they clearly don't want to pay him all that damn money, but then they also don't want to trade him away for chump change.
Yeah. And again, I get it, because even if right now, like, all of NBA Twitter is like, you're not gonna get anything for him, he's useless. But as a GM, you can't treat it like that, because then you're really going to get nothing back. And again, like, if I were other teams, especially in the East, I'm not even going to try trading for the guy. I want to see you rock, because then that's one less team I got to worry about this year.
Yeah.
And they'll still be competitive with Maxey and Tobias and all them. Like, they'll be fine. They're just not going to be a contender. They're going to be a first round team, probably. You know, maybe second, maybe.
I don't know. I just think, but if it's so much turmoil, that those other things off the court can really seep in and really kind of knock your ceiling down.
And that could be the next biggest domino here, is this offseason cannot be done yet with the big moves, because if Harden decides he wants out, or if the Sixers stay firm with we're not going to move him, well, then what does Embiid think about all of it? Does he eventually be like, you know what, this is enough. I've dealt with this for however many years now. You guys can't get a consistent second star next to me, and that's pretty much all I'm sure he's been asking for, is at least just someone else consistently to play with him. And they just haven't been able to find that guy. And I think the idea is you want to try and find someone to put next to him and Maxey, not just him and Maxey, because I don't think that that team is near as good. And Maxey's still a really good player, but yeah. I've felt like they've always needed something else. So I wonder, when
we were talking about this, like, as far as like Maxey, like, doesn't B view Maxey that way?
Right.
Like, does he view Maxey as a legitimate number two option next to him that can help him win a championship in this short window he has, you know, of being healthy? How many healthy 100% seasons does Embiid have in him? How many more MVP years does he have in him with his injury history? Right. Does he believe Maxey can help him get over the hump like that? It just seems like he doesn't. I mean, from the moves they've made and how they've kind of operated, because it's like, if you really felt Maxey was that guy, then you would just trade Harden. Like, what would be the big deal?
You would trade him for a bunch of role players on expiring deals or whatever second round picks you could get, and try and turn those guys into tradable assets, or they're role players that can help you with your championship push.
If you think Maxey can be 25 point per game all star, then why go through all of this with James Harden? Why?
Right. I would have traded him already and wouldn't have thought twice about it. And again, I understand. And maybe this is all just talk for now. Once we get closer to the season and closer to camp, maybe he just folds and he's like, all right, I'm just going to send you somewhere. And so right now he could just be posturing, but I don't think so. I think that Daryl Morey's kind of, I don't want to say insane. Insane's not the word, but I don't think that he's bluffing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. But when he's locked in on, you know, proving something right, he's pretty stubborn about it. You know, how he operated in Houston, man. Like, I mean, how many people were telling him he was crazy with the small ball, PJ Tucker at the five, and shooting 100 threes a game, like, he locked in on it. He doubled down on it. So I expect him to do the same with this Harden shit.
Oh, my bad. My mic was muted. I mean, either way, I don't think that this situation is going to end particularly the best. And again, I think he's kind of like, he's approaching Russ trade value, where I'm not sure what you're going to, I think that the, first of all, Tommy Shepard is a king for the deal that he was able to get done with Westbrook. But because I don't think that any other team in any situation that they were at the time, I think the Lakers wanted to, like, really quickly put something together. And when you have both LeBron and AD, it's probably a little bit different. You probably operate a little bit differently than other teams would around the league. So I get that. But I think that Harden's approaching that value where it's like, I am just not exactly sure what I'm going to get back. And it's probably not going to be a lot. So, I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. We will definitely see.
Anything else?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and cut it then. Appreciate you guys turning into another episode. I know it's been a while. We'll be back more frequently once we get closer to the season and we start hearing about position battles. Maybe we'll drop a little something when we get the schedule released. But I appreciate you guys listening. If you're not already subscribed, please make sure that you are. Leave us a review and rate us 5 stars. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.